That unruffled beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and it's time for the Always Live So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, where tellers from greenhorns to aces take us on astounding journeys with profound personal narratives, enchanting folk tales, and every conceivable kind of yarn in between. Only on listener sponsor KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston Downtown, along with essential team players Roxy Russell and Shannon McGurchy. You know, storytellers know that a sense of humor is needed armor in a world of chaos and commotion. These markedly skilled and astute communicators convey joy in their hearts and laughter on their lips while curiously signifying that down deep, they have a pretty good grasp of life. In turn, listeners do more than resonate with their stories. We feel them because they become our story, too. My guest is precisely this type of teller. He's been here before, but because of your requests, the pounding chant, Brendan, Brendan, has kept me up nights, so I had to bring him back so I could finally get some sleep. Brendan Borkshiel writes plays, essays, and short stories, both fiction and non. He's been published in Everyday Fiction, Cracked, and NerdTitan.com, where he is an editor and culture correspondent. When he's not writing, he is busy pursuing his other calling in life, dog sitting. But right now, I'm thrilled that he's sitting next to me in the studio. Brendan, thank you, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Dog sitting.
Yes.
Well, you know, no shih tzu. That's a great thing. How'd you get involved in that?
Well, you know, I got into writing for the reasons we all do, the money and the ladies, but
right,
neither of those was really working out. So
No, they never did. Equitable fallback, dog sitting. When you talk about culture correspondent, what does that mean?
That is a catch-all term for whatever I want.
So there's no culture involved in corresponding.
Everything is culture is really the anecdote there.
Yeah, well, what is NerdTitan.com all about?
Covering,
I did my research, by the way.
So, oh, yeah, I can see.
You can't, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just covering movies, comic books, everything in the nerdverse, really.
Mm-hmm. Right, in the nerdverse.
In the nerdverse, yes.
It's a verse all its own. You know, back in March, you made an indelible impression with your outrageous story about your 911 prank calls, and that deeply resonated with our listeners, especially those who are prone to criminal behavior.
Which, to be fair, is a lot of your listeners.
Yeah, I think it's the vast majority of them. This is aired in most prisons worldwide, and it's one of the more popular
really
shows.
Well with
yeah.
the prison demo.
But, you know, I want to get back to crack.com for a moment, because I want you to know that was pretty impressive stuff.
Oh.
Pretty impressive stuff. Okay. I know we're jumping around. I just want to see if you're alive and well. But, you know, I took a look at crack.com, and I was impressed. And I want to read a few articles, and I want listeners to hear the excellent, excellent stuff that crack.com publishes. You mind if I read this?
Okay,
okay,
go ahead.
Please. 5 ways movies get gunfighters wrong. I think that's great. That's wonderful. If animals got E, true Hollywood stories, 5 famous movie villains with shockingly stupid master plans. Name 2.
No idea. Darth Vader, Nurse Ratched.
Nurse Ratched?
That was a terrible plan she had.
All right. How about the 6 worst things about group text conversation? Who wrote that?
I'm surprised there were only 6.
Yeah, really? What are some of those worst things that you can think of about text conversation?
Group text conversations?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
At first I
thought it said group sex, but that's not what you're talking about. It is group text conversation. So what are some of the worst scenarios?
Just everything you're saying is being scrutinized by 6 people. There's no such thing as a sidebar.
How'd you get that gig with Correct?
You know, my favorite pastime is overanalyzing children's movies to a obtuse degree, and mm-hmm. you wouldn't think there would be a market for that, but there is.
It's a nice hobby. It's a nice hobby.
Thank you.
So you just sit around and listen to children's, watch children's movies, and amplify and
berate
and just really reduce all the dignity we can think of mm-hmm. when it comes to children's movies.
Ruin childhood.
Yeah, well, that's really great.
Thank you.
Your parents must be very, very proud of you.
You know, they are disproportionately proud.
Yeah, they were hoping for a brain surgeon, but they got cracked instead, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And actually, your story is about your parents, both of whom are listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you say hi to them?
Hi, Karen. Hi, Kathleen.
Karen and Kathleen. Well, you've got us. You captured us. And this is going to be a very neat story about some pretty spectacular parents, I must say. Tell us your story.
The list of things I know about my biological father is very short. He's 5'7", Italian-American, blue eyes, balding, wears glasses for distance. Pretty much everything else about him was kept undisclosed to me as per the terms of Pacific Women's Health Services, where my two moms went when they were looking for a sperm donor. The arrangement was I couldn't know anything else about him until I turned 18, which was proving to be difficult on this particular day in the third grade at Montgomery Elementary because we were writing essays about our fathers. The prompt was to write why your father is important to you, and I was looking at the sheet of paper, reviewing the few basic facts I knew about my dad, and trying to construct an image of the man who could be their logical son. And it was difficult because I just didn't think about him a lot. You know, I already had two parents, two moms, one of whom is arguably more butch than I am, and did all the stuff that little boys normally do with their dads. So not having dedicated a lot of thought to him, I just didn't know what to write on this essay. And finally, I decided to write what I normally write when medical forms ask for information about my dad, N.A., not applicable. So I wrote that as my essay. I turned it in. I thought, done. Perfect. Killed it. And this kid next to me said, what did you write? I said, well, I didn't have to write anything because I don't have a dad. I have two moms. He said, how do you have two moms? And I said, well, because they're gay. And everyone around me in the class started, like, giggling in this stifled way like I had just told them a joke with a bad word in it. One kid said, what does gay mean? And another kid said, it's what Michael Jackson is. And I realized I was in an all-too-familiar kind of trouble. It was the unique kind of trouble you got into for talking about gay people in small-town Texas in the 90s. In retrospect, I call it opening up Pandora's closet. And opening up Pandora's closet is something I did with regrettable frequency in those early days in Montgomery. We had moved there from the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was still sort of figuring out that the word gay meant something different in Montgomery than it did in San Francisco. I think a lot of the people in Montgomery felt the way about gay people that they did about dragons, by which I mean they didn't believe they existed, but even if they did exist, they really didn't want them in their town. So having gay parents in the midst of that was kind of confusing. At home, the word gay was this totally acceptable, honestly kind of essential piece of vocabulary to know, but at school it was profanity, and I would get reprimanded for saying it. And this day was no exception. So as I was sitting there in this class trying to angrily explain to a laughing group of kids that my parents were not what Michael Jackson is, a pop star, my teacher nervously sort of interjected and exiled me to the counselor's office. The counselor was this older woman. She had lived in Montgomery for most of her life, and after I debriefed her on what had happened, I said, what should I do about this? She said, well, Brendan, I don't know that there's an easy fix to this one. And she started looking through these pamphlets on her desk, I guess like looking for one that applied to my situation. But apparently Montgomery ISD didn't print a "So you just outed your parents as lesbians" pamphlet back then. So she said, you know, Brendan, when adults tell you to always tell the truth, they're lying. And I didn't know what she meant. So she leaned forward and she said, if you want my advice, don't tell anyone else about your parents. The other kids, they're just going to keep teasing you. There's nothing I can do to fix that. The best thing you can do is keep this a secret.
All right, we're going to pick that up in a few minutes. Keep it a secret. You really don't want to tell the truth, right? That's amazing. That is amazing. You know, this story just harkens back to a time that we'd rather forget, but it's very real now still, isn't it? It really is. It's very, very real now. Yeah. This is Hank Rubichek with Roxy and Shannon, and you are listening to guest teller Brendan Borg-Scheel on So What's Your Story, only on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, or KPFT.org if you are listening online, but whatever channels you chose, we are glad you did. Okay, so we left off with your highly educated, wisdom-laden counselor advising you to keep it all to yourself, right? We got that right.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, great.
So my counselor's advice, depressing as it was practical, If I didn't tell anyone about my parents, I didn't get teased. Though it still left me with the problem of what to do when people asked about my dad. That's what had gotten me into this mess in the first place. And the logical answer was, lie. So that's what I did. When people asked about my dad, I alternately told them he was a businessman living in Japan. I told them he was a skyfighter, which is a profession I made up. It's someone who fights fires in the sky. And the most enduring lie I told about my dad was one I told to a kid named Dustin. Dustin was one of my best friends at the school. He was a really nice kid, and if anyone could have handled knowing the truth about my dad, I think it would have been him. Which is why one day I started to tell him the truth in kind of a moment of candor. I told him I wasn't allowed to see my dad. But before I could get further into the explanation, he said, "Why not? Is your dad in jail?" And I said, "Oh my God, Dustin, how did you know?" "Yes, he's been in jail almost since I was born." For some reason, the idea of my dad being in jail resonated with me so much more than all the other occupations I'd assigned him. I started immediately learning as much as I could about crimes and prisons so that I could come up with a good backstory for him. Since my real dad was Italian, I decided my fake prison dad should be in the mafia. I told Dustin he was smuggling things into the prison and selling them to the other convicts, and Dustin said, "You know, isn't that against the rules?" And I said, "It's how you survive, Dustin." I got so invested in this particular lie that I would tell other kids different lies in front of Dustin. Like someone would ask, "You know, why is your dad not coming to the open house tonight?" And I'd say, "Oh, you know, he's a sea captain and he's off in the Bermuda Triangle or something." And then that kid would walk away and I'd say, "Now, Dustin, you understand I can't tell everyone the truth. They wouldn't get it." And he'd say, "Oh, yeah, I get it, man." I really loved this lie, but over time it got too complicated. Like, I had made up so many details of his fake backstory that I couldn't keep them all straight in my head anymore, and I realized if I kept this going, I was going to get caught in my own web of BS. So I thought, you know, this was a great lie while it lasted, but it's time to put an end to it. And so one day, Dustin and I were doing math, and Dustin asked, "Hey, how's your dad doing?" And I said, "Actually, Dustin, my dad's dead." And he said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, he got in a fight in the yard, some kind of gang thing. I don't really know. I'm pretty broken up about it, man, so if we could go ahead and never talk about it again, that would be great." And he said, "Yeah, of course, whatever you want, man." And he went back to his work, a little mortified, and I thought, done, perfect, killed it. I was very satisfied that I had wrapped this up succinctly. What I did not count on was Dustin's mother, who, a week later, at a PTA meeting, went up to my mom and said, "I'm so, so sorry for your loss. How is Brendan doing now that his father is dead?" My mom was understandably a little surprised at the news. She denied it, which was not ideal, but I guess was fair since it was completely untrue. And she went home and told me what had happened. I thought I was in serious trouble, but she didn't punish me. I guess because, like my school counselor, she didn't have a better idea for what I should be saying when people asked about my dad. This wasn't the kind of thing you could fix by sending me to school with a note. Instead, she just said, "Next time you come up with a story like that, let me in on it so I'm ready for the next PTA meeting." And that was that. Now, looking back at the story years later, I sort of asked myself, why, of all the lies I told about my dad, why was my favorite the one where he's in prison? And I think the reason why is because it's the closest to the truth, not in substance, but in effect. The idea of my dad being in prison, like the truth, is information that not everyone would be understanding of. And it was information that I shouldn't have had to have been ashamed of, but could still make me a pariah if it got out. I'd been reprimanded at this point so many times for telling the truth, I didn't want to do it anymore, but telling this story was sort of like a practice run for the truth, and in the years to come, I started telling people the real situation with my parents in very gradual increments. In junior high, I told a couple people. In high school, I told a couple more people. By the time I got to college, I was completely open about having two moms, but getting to that point was a process. It was a slow transition to the truth that started with a lie, and my fictional mafioso prison father helped me get there, so I know how this sounds, but I'm grateful to him.
Yeah. Great. Thank you, Brad. You know, what do you, you know, you lie so well. You really do. Have you ever thought about getting into the liars contest? We have one in the Storytellers Guild. And I have to tell you, you're the most convincing liar. You're wonderful. But on a very serious level, you're really not lying. You're doing a fabulous job at demonstrating how very difficult it is a story like this is to tell. So, for example, when you talk about your dad, do you have any regrets about not knowing him?
You know, it was the furthest thing from my mind most of the time growing up, and it was just in the past couple of years that I've really started to get curious.
Yeah. Well, what are you curious about? I mean, if you had to ask him one question, what question would that be? What would the one question be that you would ask your dad?
This is a stupidly simple answer, but what line of work are you in?
You never knew that.
No.
Could have been in the mafia.
Yeah, yeah. I guess
so. Sounds like he would, right?
Probably.
He doesn't sound like the hit guy because he's only 5'7". That wouldn't be very threatening, but I think that, you know, he might have been.
He could have been a Joe Pesci
type. Do you have any idea what he did? Not at all?
I have suggestions that I've gotten through the pipeline that he works in the arts.
Interesting. Very, very good. Very, very good. And this was a great story, but on a very serious level, what is it that we should learn from this story?
If there's something to be learned,
Oh, I think there is. There is.
It would be nice if someone hearing this story thought about how the gay marriage decisions we're making in America right now don't just affect couples, they affect kids.
They really do. It's a public service thing. It isn't just a family thing. It's about all of us, isn't it? It really is. And I'm glad that you said that because I'm curious about when you gave yourself permission to tell this story, because I'm always thinking about what Maya Angelou insisted, and that is there's no greater agony than burying an untold story inside you. Uh-huh. And you must have not told this story for some time, for whatever the reason might be.
Sure.
Must have had some trepidation. What was the ignition key that gave you permission to tell this story?
You know, I told it because it's topical and relevant to what's happening in the world right now, and the reason it's topical and relevant is because a lot of people in the gay rights movement have been working very hard for a long time to make it so. So the people who gave me permission, I think, are those people.
Wow. Yeah. Roxy, Shannon, what are some of your perceptions? It's a great topic, and it's really a very salient one. Have you ever known of somebody who's had gay parents? Roxy?
No, I have not. However, I do have friends who are gay, who are at that point in their life where they want a real relationship that would last them marriage and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, great. Shannon?
My cousin Lisa's kids, Ephraim and Ethan. My cousin Lisa has a life partner in Arizona, and they've done an amazing job raising those kids.
Yeah.
Couldn't be more happy.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about this in just a minute. This is Hank Rubicek, and you're listening to Spotlight Teller. Brendan Borg-Scheel shared his narrative about his two moms on So What's Your Story, only on KPFT 90.1 FM. Next week, we're going to continue stories about our parents when award-winning teller Scott Bumgardner issues advice on collecting family stories while taking us back to his world in a way that will truly amaze you. And amazing is indeed the word to describe the best storyteller group anywhere, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Roxy, why don't you tell us when and where they meet, please?
Hank, the Guild meets on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray.
Right across from Marshall's, right across from Cafe Express there. We're meeting next Tuesday. We've got a great, great membership going. And Shannon, I know you come to the meetings a great deal. I'm trying to talk Brandon into doing it. And we've really got a lot of folks who were guests here joining that group. It really is a spectacular group. Thanks, Roxy. And check out our site at www.HoustonStorytellers.org for all the fun stuff, including Skyline Screamers on Friday, October 31st, 7 o'clock at Marmion Park. Just be very, very scared. Bring your blankies, something to hide under, right? Shannon, nothing scary about our So What's Your Story Facebook page, however, for which you are responsible. What's on that page?
I post everything from guest information to festivals, news, fantastic photos, videos, links to the Guild site, and information about the Moth, and so much more.
Yeah, you really do, and you do a great job researching. We were talking about that a little earlier, and you guys are both so essential. Roxy is one of the best board operators around. She's so reliable, and Shannon, you do a great job at research. You really do, even Brendan was saying, so you research us, and she does. She finds out about anybody, even if they're not Googleable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, somehow she just finds them. Somehow. Now, Roxy found you at the Moth, right? And Shannon had mentioned the Moth a little bit earlier. You haven't been there lately, though, have you?
I have not.
Yeah.
But I've been
listening
to the people you've been bringing on from the Moth. It's still a great lineup.
Yeah, we really do. We have a great lineup from the Moth. I unleash both of them. They go to the Moth and unfortunately have to pay for parking. But I'll reimburse you guys, but they do. They get a great, great lineup, and you've got some great taste, absolutely. Brendan, because of your story, I was reminded of a story that was told by one of my students that I wanted to share with you. It's really a quote, and I received permission from her. As many of the listeners know, I teach a storytelling class, and that combined with this show, I've collected so many wonderful narratives over the years. And this is a student. Her name is Beth, and she's given me permission to say this on the air. She has two gay parents. She has gay parents, and she says, and I quote, "All I knew was that my two moms loved me a lot. They hugged me, talked to me, and most important, listened to me. Gay or heterosexual, those are the things great parents do. And what I learned, however, is that my world with them was about openness and about tolerance. I'm a straight woman, and I have a boyfriend, and my mom's taught me to care and be a good person. They are my role models and always will be." And, you know, your moms are pretty special, too. Why don't you tell us what they do for a living? Because this is pretty special, I think.
Well, one of my moms works in psychology. She spent a lot of years working in school districts, testing and placing kids with developmental disorders. The other one is a caretaker for people with Alzheimer's, older people, lots of different ailments.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't realize the obvious, and that is that many gays and lesbians rarely become parents by accident, compared with almost 50% accidental pregnancy rate among heterosexuals. And I think what this translates into is a greater commitment on average and more involvement. You know, kids waiting to be adopted are just happy to be adopted, right? And they don't care who you are. They want to make sure that you love them and that you're committed to them and that you do something that other people can't do, like spend time and become engaging and to be compassionate and loving. And I'm not so sure as many parents do that as probably should. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I there's this story about my mom getting her ultrasound, and they asked her, "Are you sure of the conception date?" And my other mom said, "We still have the receipt." They couldn't have been more deliberate in their choice.
That is great. What was the response to the doctor?
I have no idea, but they couldn't have been more deliberate in their choice is the point. Yeah. And, you know, they was...
What are your moms and you talk about? Seriously, what are some of the conversation? What are some of the topics you guys have? Can you tell us?
You know, we've spent a lot of time, I guess, talking about... and them reconciling for having me grow up in Texas with gay parents. And I think they kind of feel like there was a failure on that part, but you know,
how so?
Just to live in this place and to not have a lot of other peers who were, you know, in the same situation as me. But I really do think they did the best they could, and if they hadn't brought me here, I wouldn't have this story. So there's that.
Yeah. If their first names were an adjective, what would they be? Instead of their real names, what adjectives would you associate with your mom?
Mm.
Kind of descriptors.
Karen, I would say empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And Kathleen, I would say very smart.
Yeah. That's really just a wonderful recipe for great parents. They're listening tonight, right? They give you any kind of advice before you came on the air? They tell you what to say, what not to say? They filter anything? They monitor anything?
Oh, well, if they did, I couldn't tell you, right?
Right. No, you could, but I'm just curious. Did they give you any advice at all?
No, they just said, just relax, and, you know, our whole reputation is on your shoulders.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you want to embarrass us, go for it. Go right ahead, because you do a good job at that anyway. Now, how do they feel about you telling a story about them tonight? That's sort of an important question. What is our take on that?
What's funny is I didn't ask their permission. I just kind of did it, but I mean, I told them about it before I was going on, and they were like, okay, sure, you know, go ahead. I hope this works out.
How do you get some of the ideas for your stories? Because I notice that when you tell a story, it really unfolds beautifully right in front of you. It really does. It's sort of like, it's like you're watching the story unfold, and you're telling it as you unfold it. Now, that may or may not be true, but you tell it that way because you have such great vocal cadence and great style. And I know that just doesn't come naturally. You have to practice at that.
That's the illusion.
And this is a question that's going to require a comprehensive answer. But I'm really curious. When you think about yourself as a storyteller, what is it that you like about yourself as a storyteller? What do you like about yourself when you're telling a story?
Wow. I really try because I'm a writer, but I also think when you're telling oral stories that it's important to be spoken and not read. I try to mediate between the two. And so, you know, my aspiration is to sound like a very calculated but simultaneously extemporaneous, which I know is a little kind of paradoxical, but that's what I'm going for.
Well, no, I think that's a good point, because sometimes the only way to really sound natural and extemporaneous is to be, frankly, very highly prepared.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the only way to do that. So you want to tell a lot more stories, right?
Sure.
What kind of stories you like telling mostly? Humorous, sincere, poignant? What's your general genre?
Yeah, it's gravitating towards humorous. I mm-hmm. can't go more than a minute without making someone laugh, or I feel like a failure in life.
Yeah,
so.
But they're also really serious. You know, Mark Twain said it best, show me someone who knows what's funny, and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't.
Yeah.
And I think that you do that very, very well.
Thank
very,
you.
Very well. Next week, Scott Bumgardner is going to be here to collect our family stories. In the meantime, you've given your mom, I think, Brendan, seriously, your mom's a gift most parents can only envy. You express your love for them openly in story form, a narrative that will forever be etched in their hearts. And thank you so much for returning and for the courage and wit always inserted in your stories. I'm proud to call you a friend, and we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back for actually a third time, maybe even a fourth or fifth, because we're going to be on forever, right? Because you love the show, don't you?
Absolutely.
Actually, yeah, I'm sure you do, of course. Yeah, you do. You're a fan, though.
I do. I listen.
You are a fan, absolutely. Don't anybody move, because Scooter is up next with the Inner Side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.